welcome to a very special episode of the Innovation Agency podcast. I'm Caroline Kenyon, and I'm going to be talking to someone who's become a legendary leader in healthcare in the Northwest Coast, our chair, Gideon Bentovim, OBE. Gideon has a rich history as an academic and an activist in race relations, health and well-being, and the natural environment. He steps down as Innovation Agency Chair in autumn 2023, but his campaigning will continue. Hello and welcome back to the podcast, Gideon Bentovim, OBE.
Thank you, Caroline. Delighted to be here. Thank you.
Now, if I may, I'm going to start with a brief recap of your CV. I'm going to do it in headline forms because there's a lot to talk about. Okay. You've been chair of the Innovation Agency for 10 years. Mm-hmm. You helped set it up with our founding chief executive, Liz Meir. Before that, you were chair of the former Liverpool Primary Care Trust for 10 years. And you were awarded the Order of the British Empire in 2012 for services to health. You were a Labour councillor in Liverpool for 21 years, which included several years as Labour group and opposition leader and chair of the Education Committee. Going back a bit further in time, you studied philosophy, then social anthropology at Cambridge. You went to London School of Economics to study for a Master's in Sociology with race relations as a specialist interest. And you came to work at the University of Liverpool as a lecturer in sociology, specialising in race and ethnic relations, where you worked for 30 years. And in that time, you researched race relations and you published more than 50 papers, articles and books. And you also led organisations campaigning to improve race relations in Liverpool. Among your many roles, you've chaired the Nature Connected movement in Liverpool and led the Liverpool City Region Year of the Environment campaign to highlight the many ways in which the natural environment is essential to our well-being. And this work, of course, continues in your role as chair of the Liverpool City Region Climate Committee. There's a lot to talk about, isn't there?
There is. Thank you. Yes.
Now, Gideon, you're counting down to the end of your tenure at the helm of the Innovation Agency, and it's going to be great to hear your reflections on this last decade. But first, I'd love to find out more about those passions that you've brought to this role. If we start with that dedication you've had from the very beginning to addressing racial inequalities, where has that come from?
Partly from my own background, I would think. I come from a Jewish immigrant background and family. So I guess issues around race and racism have always been something I've been concerned about and personally interested in. And I got more involved in the area through my master's degree at the LSE. And then when I came to Liverpool, I was recruited to carry out research on the problem of racism in Liverpool. So that's really where my academic career started. As part of that research, I was privileged to work with some great colleagues at the university and the community to explore the various strands of inequality in Liverpool, of which, sadly, there were many. And it's not the sort of research you can let sit on a shelf. So it felt very important for me to be trying to use the research findings in a practical way to develop policy with a key range of organisations in the city and to work with community groups to really try to eradicate racism. So I guess that's part of how it came about. I think it was consolidated by my appointment as a councillor for the Granby ward, which is a very strongly multi-ethnic ward in Liverpool. Again, a further incentive for me to do all I possibly could to support communities in the Liverpool 8 area and to help make Liverpool a better, more equal place for everyone.
So you're combining academia with activism, weren't you?
I was, yes. I've always felt academics shouldn't just do research for a library. They should put any knowledge and expertise they have to the service of people they're researching and working with.
You were born in Merseyside, weren't you, in Wallasey, although you left at just a few years old, weren't you? Mm-hmm. And you were born into the NHS, you've often said. What was that What was that like? Describe what was that
well,
like.
Well, it was really interesting looking back. So my father was a GP, initially in Wallasey, then in London where I grew up. My mother was the practice manager, the finance officer, the triage nurse, the receptionist. and I, on a Friday evening, helped to arrange the Lloyd George envelopes that some of us might know about, where you keep your medical records. Maybe that's a lifelong interest in helping to organise things in a systematic sort of way. So, yes, the surgery was in the house. The waiting room was next to the kitchen. The conservatory was next to our living room. So, you know, I really felt I was part of the NHS from an early age, very privileged to do so.
And you've got two brothers who are psychiatrists.
Yes, they both were doctors, then psychiatrists. I never took to the sciences. I always preferred languages. So somehow I ended up with the humanities and social sciences, although I'm delighted to have been back, as it were, within the NHS as a chair over the last 20 years.
Sort of inevitable, really, isn't it, growing up in that family? And your sister, you had a very artistic and very successful sister who we have to mention.
Yes, Atara, who died sadly at the end of last year. Brilliant flautist. She was the principal at Liverpool Phil, and became a household name, actually, in Liverpool. If I meet somebody new and tell them what my name is, the first thing they say is, oh, you must be connected to the Phil, are you? That lady used to play the flute and do those concerts and so on. So, yes, she was a brilliant, brilliant person. Miss her dearly. And I think music's always been an important part of my family, actually. My father had been an amateur musician. My brother plays jazz saxophone. I preferred classical music. I used to play the piano, clarinet and the bassoon in the past, but not anymore. So, yeah, music's always been, classical music, I have to say, has been a very important thing for me, coming back from my family, which my sister carried on that tradition in such a superb way.
Yes, your sister definitely is a legend in Liverpool and probably globally. Yeah. And I would suggest you probably are too, Gideon, hence the OBE. And in particular, that dedication to addressing racial inequalities, as we say, you were actively researching and promoting race equalities at a really interesting time in Liverpool, weren't you? Mm. You actually predicted the riots in Topters a year before they happened. You wrote an article that said time was running out, didn't you?
Yes. So again, working with colleagues in the community and academic colleagues, we produced a report called Racial Disadvantage in Liverpool, which did say that things were very critical. There was a lot of racial disadvantage. There were a lot of problems between the police and the black community. Sadly, at that time, there was a lot of evidence of harassment of black people, young men particularly, many of whom acquired a criminal record, really, for no fault of their own. A lot of evidence of planting. Indeed, I recall there was one case of the police basketball coach who had drugs planted on him. We were involved in a campaign to support him, and he was found not guilty. So it was just a small example, sadly, of some of the problems that were going on at that time, which were in part due, very much a key part in the explosion in 1981.
Why do you think things were so bad for the black community?
Well, I think it goes back, sadly, history of racism in this country. You have to look back to the history of race, slavery, colonialism, and some of those prejudices, I think, lingered on in the city, sadly, despite having a long-standing black community with, I think, considerable intermarriage between black and white. And that partly sparked up stereotypes, prejudices that held the community back during that period. So there's a history there that lay behind the events in 1981.
And it wasn't just the police, was it? You turned your attention to the council's housing department with your report, Race and Housing. What was the story there?
Yes, so we were commissioned at the University of Liverpool by the Commission for Racial Equality because they were concerned about what they'd heard about housing inequalities in Liverpool. They asked us to produce a report. We did a very thorough research into the issue, proved a number of strands of racial discrimination in the housing allocation policy, and made a number of recommendations as to what needs to be done to improve council allocations. Ironically, the day that the report was produced, the chair of our steering group, who was the housing manager of Liverpool, who acknowledged the issues and the problems and agreed that things need to be done, he was sacked, or rather sent on gardening leave on the day that the report was produced, sadly, because the council at that time, under militant control, refused to accept the findings. And in fact, the colleague involved came to do an MA in ethnic studies that I was organising along with my excellent colleague, late June Henfrey, and he actually spent the next 2 years on gardening leave doing the MA with us at the University of Liverpool. So it was ironic. And that report was actually followed up by a formal investigation by the Commission for Racial Equality, which again found evidence of racial discrimination and made a number of statutory requirements on the council to improve its housing policy. So that came out of our research, the follow-up.
Amazing. And gaining a supporter along the way in that individual, that is quite the story. So you were always an activist. Wasn't it inevitable then that you stood for election to the city council? And that was a very significant time for the city, wasn't it?
I suppose it was. I don't know about it was inevitable, because I've been, I suppose, somewhat of a critic of the city council, really, in terms of urging it to take action on housing, on employment, issues around social care and health, a number of critical issues, but a number of council vacancies became free in 1987 when the militant group were expelled through government action. They were forced to stand down. In fact, I'd been one of the critics of the council at the time, working with my colleagues in the black community. We'd produced a report for the Labour Party pointing out some of the problems of their, at that time, very colourblind policies, refusing to accept there was an issue of race and racism. It was just class. And although class, of course, is very important, there is a special issue around racism that they were ignoring. So there were 47 vacancies, and I was approached to stand for one of those, which I hadn't really expected to at all. I was a Labour Party member, but not really an activist in the way that sometimes people work for years and years to become a councillor. That wasn't the case with me. So I was very pleased to have been asked and was delighted to have been appointed. And I really enjoyed being part of the City Council. I think it's a great institution, despite the problems that it's had. It is a public really important public sector organisation.
Absolutely. But in those early 80s, you published a report, The Racial Politics of Militant in Liverpool, which had a foreword, didn't it, by the Archbishop and Bishop of Liverpool?
Yes.
And that was about a particular incident, I think, which scandalised you.
Yes. What triggered the report was the appointment of a race relations advisor by the City Council. One of the recommendations when I was chair of the Race Equality Council that we made was that there should be a race equality unit in the City Council, including a principal race advisor. The recommendations were made before the militant group took over the council, but they appeared to accept the recommendations. There was an appointment process. I was invited to be on the appointment panel as chair of the Race Equality Council. And to our astonishment at the appointment, the least qualified candidate was appointed. He'd been slipped into the appointment process at the very last minute. I was on the group of us who were on the appointment panel with the councillors, although we took part in the shortlisting, it was interesting to see that. There were a number of good candidates that the councillors appeared to accept. And there was one that came, they said, the chair of the panel said, well, there's just one more we'd like to slip in, if you don't mind, at the last minute. We haven't got all the details. And we rather naively said, oh, well, okay, they've accepted all our proposals. And lo and behold, this person who was slipped in at the last minute was appointed. He was clearly a militant supporter. He said all the things that the councillors at the time wanted to hear. He didn't believe in ethnic record keeping. He didn't believe in positive action. He didn't believe in particular facilities for minority groups. And that's why he got the job completely. And the first and only time in my life I walked out of the appointment. I've sat on hundreds of appointments in my life, and that was the only one they've actually walked out on. And shortly afterwards, there was a sit-in in the office of the deputy leader of the City Council. Eventually, he agreed to rescind the appointment, but then a week later, he changed his mind and the appointment was made. So the book that we wrote, the Liverpool Black Caucus wrote, was called The Racial Politics of Militant, and it tells a story really about that appointment, including eyewitness account of the appointment that took place from myself. But the whole background as well of race in Liverpool and attempts to be made to improve the situation. So it's, I think, an interesting read. And we were pleased that the Bishop and Archbishop provided the preface to that. We had worked closely with them during the 1981 uprisings, worked with them to try to calm the situation and lead to positive initiatives after that. And I was pleased that they provided the preface to our report.
And that instant you describe with the sit-in in the office.
Yeah.
Well, I was there because I was a reporter of the Daily Post at the time. I was in the corridor outside with a pack of press, photographers, camera crews. It was bizarre. There were lots of bizarre happenings at that time. It really was an incredible time to be in Liverpool. So moving on to the NHS, as chair of Liverpool PCT for 10 years, among the many highlights must be your role in leading smoke-free Liverpool. Now we take it for granted, don't we? They can't be smoking in public places. But just take us back to that time when you started that campaign.
Yeah, well, it was a great campaign. There were many other people involved, so I don't take particular responsibility for it. I was part of it. It was a great movement, really, because it took in both NHS colleagues, took in communities, it took in young people. We managed to persuade pubs and restaurants that they needed to make a leap of faith and move towards smoke-free initiatives. So, it was an exciting initiative to be a part of, and it's exciting to have won it as well, particularly because it's great to be part of campaigns anyway, working collectively with colleagues for achieving change. But when you actually win, so when the government did introduce smoke-free legislation, we were absolutely delighted. And I do think that was a very, very important public health achievement by colleagues' partnership working in Liverpool. And I was very pleased to be part of that.
And the Liverpool campaign led the way. There were campaigns then that followed around the country, but Liverpool was the pioneering first up at the with the barricades, first one leading the charge really against the government in what seemed like an unwinnable campaign, didn't it?
It did. And I think what was clever, colleagues involved in the campaign, they projected it as protecting workers. I thought that was skilled. I don't take any credit for that. That was really one of the key ideas that our colleagues promoted. Again, I was very happy to back that. But it was about protecting the staff who had to work in these smoky environments. And I thought that was a good argument that I think won a lot of support. People accepted that at the end of the day, that was a good argument for making places smoke-free.
Yes, very hard to argue against the effect on staff, wasn't it? And another legacy that you led on was the new buildings for primary care centres.
Oh, yes. I'm really proud of what was achieved there. Again, I was just being the chair, you're a part of it and support it, but other colleagues were heavily involved in that. I was really, really delighted. If you look around Liverpool now, we've got some fantastic primary care buildings. Really some of the best in the country. And I pay tribute to PCT colleagues at the time, Chief Executive Derek Campbell, Finance Officer Phil Wadeson, who supported this. Remember us on a rainy day at the old Alfred Jones Hospital when it was announced that we were going to invest £100 million to improve primary care facilities in Liverpool. I thought, wow, I mean, it was great to be part of that announcement, but it does take your chief executive and your finance officer to back a very ambitious proposal like that. You need a chair to back it as well, but you need their input particularly to make it real, which we did. So I'm really delighted with those buildings that are still there and the wish to bring GP practices together to give them better working conditions and to bring in other services. So it was really the idea of health centres bringing other expertise into it, other services, and that's been happening, and there's still much more to do on that. So I'm pleased on that front that I'm now part of the Lift Co on the board of that, which is the organisation that put up all those buildings with the PCT. Of course, apart from the primary care infrastructure, I'm again delighted to look around Liverpool to see some of the secondary hospitals that we helped to support their development. So Alderhay, new building there, the new Royal, and the new Clatterbridge Cancer Centre in Liverpool. These are, I think, great achievements. And again, I'm really pleased that the PCT enabled those to be commissioned. And I remember the meeting when, what, a later meeting towards the end of PCT when we became NHS Merseyside, investing quite significantly in the new Clatterbridge Cancer Centre. So I'm really pleased at the infrastructure that PCT was able to leave behind.
And I know, because I worked at the Walton Centre previously, the huge building there, the Sid Watkins building, was again funded, I think, but yep. certainly commissioned by the Liverpool PCT.
Yes, that's true. So, thank you. There were others as well, yeah.
I'm sure there were others. You led on Liverpool Year of Health and Wellbeing in 2010, didn't you? Which there were a lot of activities during that year.
Yeah.
What stands out for you?
Yeah, it was a terrific year. And again, I'm deeply grateful to the staff of the PCT who really did a huge amount of work on that. It was when Dr. Paula Gray was Director of Public Health and Andy Hull led the stakeholder work. And a lot of other people were involved in that. I suppose for me, what was a particular lasting impact was the work that we did with Mersey Forest on bringing together artists, community groups and health workers in a number of venues across the city. And we had a number of growing projects, food projects, planting projects, tree projects. That was a terrific piece of work. And for me, that really made me understand fully the potential impact of environmental projects on health and well-being. And I remember vividly when we had the end of the year, we had an event bringing together all the 50 projects who'd been funded and supported through this initiative. And it was PCT, of course, that helped to fund that. When one lady stood up and said, "This has been a wonderful project. In my alley, we were able to plant some trees, some bushes, some flowers to animate our alley. And this is the first time I've spoken in public, and it meant so much to how we all feel about our community." And I thought, well, that's wonderful. If relatively small investment in projects like that shows the value of environmental issues in terms of health and well-being of communities and individuals.
We have to mention Clang. You came up with a mnemonic, didn't you, in that year?
I did. I'm not sure how widely that's taken up, Caroline, except by you and me. But the five ways to well-being at the time were thought to be important public health ways of dealing with, of thinking about a range of activities that improve health. So that our acronym was connect with others. Keep learning. That's good for your little grey cells, as Poirot would say. Be active, be physically active, of course, really important. Take notice, that's a good one, I thought. Look around, enjoy the environment. Look up when you go for a walk, look at the buildings above your head. Where do we get to? Take notice. Give, I thought that was a nice one too, which is volunteer, take part in volunteering activities. And all of those, of course, are things that link to the environment as well as general activities in life. So, yeah, Clang, I think, was great. Maybe we'll revive it after this meeting.
Yes, let's give it a relaunch. And that leads nicely on to your passion for the natural environment and its importance to well-being. If we fast forward 9 years, you use that same idea of dedicating a year to a theme.
Yes.
With the Liverpool City Region, Year of the Environment. What were you trying to do that year?
Well, again, that was to try to engage as many people and organisations, individuals, community groups as possible in taking action on the environment. This was organised through local nature partnerships that I was and remain the chair of, and we worked closely with the Liverpool City Region as well. That was really dedicated to meetings, seminars, walking, running, growing, planting, as many different activities as people could come up with. And again, that generated a lot of enthusiasm and interest. We had some great health projects, initiatives, bringing together the city region and in terms of the environment. And I think that was important in leading to a further focus by the community, the combined authority, on environmental initiatives.
And your chair of Nature Connected, that partnership organisation, and you then became advisor on the natural environment to the Metro Mayor, Steve Rotherham. So What's on the agenda now? You retain that role, don't you? Yeah. And also you're chair of the Climate Partnership?
Chair of the Climate Partnership. No longer advisor to Steve Rotherham. After his first term, he decided he didn't need people called advisors anymore. I still work closely with him. There were about 10 advisors, and he moved on from that initiative. But after the Year of the Environment, I became chair of the Climate Partnership. This was a new initiative that Mayor Steve Rotherham set up. At the end of the Year of Environment, he announced the establishment of the Climate Partnership and the Community Environment Fund, which is an important small fund initiative that was set up following year. He announced the appointment of myself as chair of the Climate Partnership in my capacity as chair of Nature Connected. And that's been meeting regularly for the last 3 years. And very shortly, a five-year climate action plan is due to be published, which again has a number of proposals around the environment, transport, housing, business, waste, the natural environment, a number of actions, 80 or 90, to be taken through the combined authority for the next 5 years. So again, I've been very pleased to be part of that, working with some great colleagues in the combined authority and a whole range of environmental partners, universities, academics and health partners who are very much involved in the partnership.
Leading a partnership, I think it's something you excel at, Gideon, and long may that work continue.
Oh, thank you.
And we're counting down now to when you stepped down as chair of the Innovation Agency. Yep. You helped set it up, didn't you, 10 years ago with Liz Meir. What are your personal reflections on some of the achievements of the last decade, some of the memories for you?
All right, thank you. Well, yes, I was very privileged to be in the beginning with Liz. I think the first few years, what stands out is helping create an organisation. I think that was the first few years, and building the partnership. So around the table, we were assembling a group of colleagues, partners from the NHS, from the private sector, from the voluntary sector, academia, to create this new organisation. Of course, it's completely new. People don't always necessarily work together in that sort of way. And the first few years, really building that partnership, trying to prove that we are a trusted partner, somebody who believed in collaboration, not competition, someone who could really develop innovation amongst our partners, particularly NHS and academic partners. So I think that was crucial, and that involved making key appointments over the first few years. I think I've been very blessed to have had outstanding people as Chief Executive, Liz Meir, followed by Phil Jennings, some great senior colleagues, directors of the partnership, and good colleagues around the table, excellent Vice Chair in Bruce Ash. So building the partnership, building the team, that was really important over the first few years. And I think changing our name to the Innovation Agency, I think that was quite an important moment, because Academic Health Science Network doesn't really capture who we are. So a few years down the line, we changed the name to the Innovation Agency. I think that was really important to capture what we stood for, made it more comprehensible. So I think that was an important moment. And establishment of our Research and Innovation Awards, I think that's also stands out, because every year we have these awards now, and they're a great moment because you really feel the enthusiasm of people around the region for innovation and research. People are really delighted to be nominated. They're really even more delighted if they win the gong. And it's just exciting to see, because that captures, makes it real. What we're trying to do is work with colleagues, with partners, to promote innovation. So I think that's another very important moment for me when we had our first award ceremony. Those have continued, and I really look forward to those every year. Last one, only a few weeks ago, I met somebody I'd never met before who's involved in a small and medium enterprise. And I said, oh, has the innovation helped with your work? He said, absolutely. I couldn't have got this far without the help of the Innovation Agency. And for me, that always feels great when you feel you are making a real difference. You are contributing. That stands out when people say that, when you feel that you are making an impact.
I'm Absolutely. So for you personally, what next? Chairing the climate partnership for Liverpool City Region, what will your focus be?
The main focus for the first year or two for the climate partnership will be making real the pledges and the plans that have been put forward. An important strand of that is the natural environment. I look forward very much to that. There is a new piece of work called Local Nature Recovery. So the combined authority now has a duty to promote the recovery of nature. So that's one of the things that I'll be involved in. I'm very committed to continuing working with the NHS on net zero. Really delighted that our agency has taken an active role in trying to move towards net zero. The ICB, the local partnership, is very committed to doing that. So there's a good opportunity, I think, for the NHS in Liverpool to keep working on. We are one of the biggest employers after all, therefore one of the biggest emitters probably of carbon that we don't need. So that'll be an important strand for me, net zero, and continuing to try to tackle inequalities. That's absolutely crucial for the NHS. It's crucial for people working in the environment. And so bringing together health inequalities, the environment, those are all really important strands for me that I hope to be a part of in the coming years.
And you'll still be clanging, I hope, still following be, Clang.
Absolutely. I'll still be taking notice, being active. I've got my Fitbit now. I shouldn't say that because that's advertising, isn't it? Counting my steps. I always enjoy counting my steps. So I shall carry on doing that, enjoying the environment and hoping to see Liverpool City Region green and blue spaces get better and stronger and healthier over the next few years.
In your capable hands, I'm sure that's what's going to happen, Gideon.
Well, I hope to be a part of that.
Well, I have to say that yours are very big shoes to fill at the Innovation Agency, and we're all going to really miss you. So from me personally and from everybody here, I wish you the very best of luck, and also a big thank you for all your support as well as your leadership.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Caroline.
Thank you. Thanks again, Gideon Bentovim, OBE, and best of luck with all your future campaigns. And thank you for listening.